Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and boy, it's cold outside, isn't it? There's a lot of snow on the ground. It's one of those kinds of times of the year when you say, well, I want to spend some more time inside. Let's talk about getting outside, though, in winter, because there's lots to do, and Joe Knight is just the guy to talk to about it. He is with the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, the author of the book Frozen Assets, Reflections on Winter in Northern Wisconsin, published by Downriver Publishing. Collection of essays organized around the theme of winter and winter sports, and those essays are based on columns he's written for, 27 years for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Pleased to welcome him to the microphone. And certainly, we've got a lot we can talk about with Joe. I hardly know where to start, but there's so many different things. I hope you'll call in to share maybe some suggestions of your own about what you do in the winter. Maybe you have some questions about the various kinds of things that can be done in the winter. Or maybe you're interested in column writing, or maybe you're interested in writing a book. All those things we can talk about with Joe today, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Joe Knight, with us by phone, essentially. Joe, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's great to hear your voice, and I really enjoyed reading your book. It was great fun, and
thank
I think
you.
The title, yeah, I think the title "Frozen Assets" is a great title.
I thought it was clever at the time, although if you Google frozen assets, you'll find all kinds of books mostly dealing with leftover food. So I'm not sure how, but I wanted to keep it rather lighthearted.
Well, I think you did that. How do you define winter? You kind of define it in your book from beginning to end.
Yeah, a little bit arbitrarily, but I started with putting up storm windows, which seems to be something that a lot of people can identify with. And from there, I went on to deer camp. And at the other end of winter, I defined it as when you make maple syrup, which either could be the last act of winter or the first act of spring, depending on your perspective.
Yeah. Winter seems to be kind of a malign season, doesn't it?
Well, it did. I started out, as I explained at the beginning, to write about, to touch on all the four seasons in there by both vocation and avocation. I like to do a lot of stuff outdoors. But I started writing it in winter, and I kind of got stuck on the winter theme. And I thought, well, how hard is it to sell people on spring in Wisconsin? So I'll just stick with winter and try to develop that theme. And for full disclosure, I should say that I do enjoy, there's some days in winter that are absolutely miserable. And I get a lot more reading done in winter also. And I get canoe trips planned, and there's a group that I tie flies with. They call a They have kind of snooty taste in scotch. They call themselves the Single Malt Club, and we alternate fly tying at each other's houses. So I'm really not outdoors every day braving the elements.
But you do get out. I mean, canoeing, I remember one of your pieces on canoeing January 1st, wasn't it?
Right, yeah. We were trying to think of something to do to maybe work off the hangover or to start the new year in a bold fashion. So some people locally, that was a few years ago, that organized a canoe trip down the Chippewa River, which has enough flow to remain open most of the winter. Did write one column about that. More recently, I've been cross-country skiing to open the new year.
Yeah, and of course, cross-country skiing plays a role, snowshoeing, hunting and fishing, canoeing, hiking. Great story on ice skating. I love that piece.
One thing I was trying to do, I don't know how successful I was to kind of get a detente between the aerobic sports crowd and the hunting and fishing crowd. I like to do all activities, I guess, or a lot of different activities. And at least in the publishing world, they're treated often as two separate camps. You know, you can, here's the hunting and fishing group. They have to wear wool clothes, you know, plaid shirts, chew tobacco. And and over here in the other corner is the aerobic sports crowd. You know, they can only drink Gatorade and they have to wear Lycra. And in reality, at least among the folks I know, there is some crossover. You know, you may have someone who in November they're deer hunting, and in February they're cross-country skiing. Maybe they're training for the Berkey.
And probably doing a little ice skating in the middle. And, you know, I looked at, as I read through those chapters, I do all those things. That's kind of, it's great.
Well, thanks.
I wonder, the winters are getting milder, and on balance, it's shortened the season a little bit for snow sports, but I guess there's always something to do out there, isn't there, in the wintertime, in the out-of-doors?
I think there is. That's when, I guess, my philosophy is to have a lot of different activities. Like, you're not all, we just got dumped on quite a bit of snow. You know, I like snow. I wish it would have come in slightly smaller increments, but I guess we're in good shape for cross-country skiing now. But if in winters, when you don't get the early snow, there's other things to do. You know, ice skating, often there's a period in winter when the lakes freeze, when I've heard the term used, Zamboni smooth, where you, if you just the right freezing conditions, you can go skating on natural lakes, which to me is more fun than an ice rink. You know, you can go kind of explore the shorelines and maybe find a couple lakes that are linked together. So that's kind of a fun project on those winters when the snow comes late, or late season. The column I wrote the week before was about late season pheasant hunting, where the marshes are frozen, so you can get access to places where you couldn't most of the fall, and the corn is finally starting to get cut. At least it was before this big snowfall, and so that was chasing a few of the birds out of their the bed and breakfast they've enjoyed all fall in the cornfield.
Well, I tell you what, we have many callers online to visit with you, and let's go to Larry in Sheboygan. Larry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've got a great activity. I've been doing it for well over 44 years, and it's surfing off of icebergs.
Surfing off of icebergs?
Gee, I missed that one for the book.
We don't have to worry about sharks. You don't have to worry about what kind of beachwear to wear. Everybody's in black. And I think the worst thing that can happen, other than drowning or freezing to death, is that shrinkage thing.
Well, I assume you're wearing a dry suit when you do this, Larry?
No, dry suits are too bulky and they're too risky due to leaking. We have a 6-millimeter wetsuit with 7-millimeter boots and 5-millimeter gloves with an attached hood. And that's part of the problem. These super stretch wetsuits, you have a slot right near your bicep that you have to squeeze your entire body through. They're called zipperless wetsuits. And just about the time you're in the darn thing and overheated and too tired to get out there and surf, well, you've got to go out there and surf. The coldest I've been out in, 17 degrees with a 24 below wind chill factor. And after 20 minutes, my board froze over and it was too slippery to stand on. So I was missing all those perfect 6-foot feelers here in Sheboygan.
This is obviously Larry Longboard.
That's absolutely right. Been on NPR many times, and I'd invite your guests to get a hold of me here in Sheboygan, and we'd love to get him out, and he'd have a lot to write about in his column.
You know, I may pass on that offer. I do have a shorty wetsuit that's 2-millimeter, and I enjoy snorkeling, but I'm not quite sure I'm ready for the winter experience.
Well, Larry, I tell you what, I appreciate the call, and you are one of the few who do this in the winter in Wisconsin. I'm pretty sure of that.
Actually, it's growing in leaps and bounds just because our surf season starts with the gales in November, right after the Dairyland Surf Classic, Labor Day. Everybody gets stoked because summer's over, and finally our time has come.
Well, I appreciate your call. And I must, Joe, that it is something.
I feel like kind of a wimp after hearing from Longberg. I mean, my column this week was about shoveling snow. That's how exciting I am.
Thanks, Larry. Dave and Augusta, on to you. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. My outdoor recreation seems kind of wimpy compared to the last caller. But what Joe knows is very, first off, I really appreciate reading his columns in the Leader Telegram in Eau Claire.
Thanks, Dave.
my wife and I go for winter walks in the Coon Fork Flowage. And that's right outside of Augusta. And then we just love going through the woods and seeing the deer. Maybe do a little ice fishing. I thought it's just something real simple and real quiet. That's my winter activity outdoors.
What do you think, Joe?
Coon Fork is a pretty little county park we have up here in the eastern part of the county, right on the edge of the county forest. And in fact, I like Coon Fork too. I went snowshoeing there with the young man who manages the campground in the summer last winter. And there's a river. Coon Fork is actually an impoundment on Black Creek, I think it is. And we walked up Black Creek for a while on our snowshoes, and then bushwhacked a little bit to get back to our vehicle. But yeah, it's a beautiful place. Well, we're fortunate in Eau Claire. We have a 50,000 acre county forest right at our doorstep here. And if that's not enough, you can keep going east into Clark County, and they have another 130,000 acres. So especially in winter, it gets pretty quiet if you're out on snowshoes.
And I think Dave's right too. You know, it's a quiet kind of activity. And you know, given all of the noise that we have to deal with in the wintertime, it's great to get outside, and it is quiet. And it is a time to reflect.
Yeah. We have the deer season, of course, is quite hectic. And
that's not so quiet.
Sometimes I feel like I'm a political reporter, you know, dealing with the deer hunting. So I kind of look forward, and I think as deer hunters, we kind of put a lot of pressure on ourselves too to, you know, shoot the big buck or whatever. So at this time of year, there's no pressure. You know, you can go ice fishing if you want. You can put on the snowshoes and go explore.
Dave, thank you. Appreciate your call. Jim in Oconomowoc, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great.
Good. Hey, I have one activity. I do many in the winter. In fact, I'm on my way to ice fish right now. But for years, I, as a former teacher, would take my students out, and this can be done absolutely anywhere. And I would build, would build what's known as a quincy, or also called a quincel. And it's really a snow house. And it can be done in about 2-3 hours, and for families that just want to go out in the backyard and build this thing, and it really, you know how kids love getting into the snow and making a fort and stuff like this. Well, this is a little more technical, but it's very simply done, and if you have a moment, I'll be glad to tell everybody how to do it.
Sure.
Okay, you clear off a space in the snow. You get down to the grassy area that you're going to make it in, and it should be about a diameter of 10 feet. And then you just start taking that snow and you throw it back on that, and you build a pile maybe, 6 feet high, let's say. And I know that sounds like a bit, but it really doesn't take much to do it, especially if you got a lot of little hands helping you. And then you wait about, 20 minutes to half an hour. And what happens is the snow, which may have been light and fluffy or thick and wet, will do what is called metamorphosis. And it actually turns into a crusty, icy structure, or a crystalline structure more. It changes the crystalline structure of the snow, so it becomes rather brittle. And then you start just digging out your quincel, and you take some sticks, and you about 6 inches long, and you just punch them through the top of that before you begin at various places. So as you're carving out the inside of your quincy, when you hit a stick, you know that you don't want to go any thinner on the shell there. And I will tell you something about quincels, that if you want absolute silence, it's the most amazing thing. I've had 3 to 5 kids sitting inside these quincels with me, and you can't believe, you cannot hear anything outside. It's just, you're amazing. And the kids, I slept in them with my grandkids and with my son. You don't have to go that far, of course, but the kids just have a ball with it. And then when it's all done and over with, if they want to, they can climb on top of it and smash it down or whatever they want to do. But it's always been a real successful outdoor activity. And I thank you for taking the time to listen to my little story here.
Oh, that's a great story, Joe.
That's great. Yeah, I'm taking notes here on how to do this. I think it's great that a teacher is getting the kids outside, because I think that that's often an area where we fall short. Up here, there's a few teachers who have taught their classes to cross-country ski, but But mainly we in winter, we, you know, we take them, we heat a gym to the temperature of Nicaragua, and we have the kids come out with a couple of round balls. And I mean, team sports are good, but I think it's nice, too, if we can encourage them that, you know, it is okay to go outside during the winter, too.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jim. Mark in Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. I've been reading Joe's columns for a long time also, and he does have that diversity of experiences that he does. He's the only person I know of who deer hunts and upland game hunts and ice fishes and also skis the Berkey. So my question is, what's the most sublime experience of that wide array, Joe, that you experience, that you enjoy the most?
Ah, good question. What do you think, Joe?
It's a little like comparing apples and oranges, and I don't think I'm that unique. I think there's more multi-sport enthusiasts up here. I don't know. That last quarter of a kilometer in the Berkey is kind of nice when you think you may actually survive. That's kind of in a masochistic kind of way. That's kind of sublime. Or just getting out this time of year with the cross-country ski trails, if you're on a nice hard track and your wax is working, there is it's a little bit hard to describe, but there's just kind of a rhythm you get into, and you kind of forget that you're outside, you forget that you're basically just wearing a little piece of Lycra to insulate you from the elements, and you kind of become one with the winter, and I find that that's my coping mechanism, I guess. I may have a little bit of seasonal affective disorder, and I find that it helps a lot if I can get out and do a few brisk activities every week.
That's great. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for calling. Joe Knight, our guest today of the Eau Claire Leader Telegram in Eau Claire. He's the author of the book Frozen Assets, Reflections on Winter in Northern Wisconsin, published by Downriver Publishing. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or send your email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about wintertime in Wisconsin and getting outside in winter. And Joe Knight has written a book that I think will really entice you to get out and try some things here. He's done so many things, and he's written about so many different kinds of winter activities, from bird watching to canoeing to ice skating to hunting to fishing to cross-country skiing. And I tell you, as you read the book, at least in my case, I thought, gosh, I got to get out and start doing some things here. It really is enticing me to get out and enjoy that frozen asset that we have here in the state of Wisconsin. Again, the number 800-642-1234. Give us a call. Reed in Clintonville. We'll go to you next. Hi, Reed.
Good morning, fellas. Say, while I was waiting, I happened to remember another activity. So the first activity I would like to recommend is to families. When our boys were younger, we used to go to a lot of county parks in the summer. But in the winter, if you really truly want to feel alone and be isolated and know what it's like to perhaps have been here when not many people lived in this area, we used to make a time for breakfast picnics in the winter at county parks. And those were really special times with our boys. So that's an activity that has stayed with me for many, many years. So the other activity is something that I'm doing right now as a potter. We actually are firing our kiln, which is heated with wood, and it's about almost 2,400 degrees inside. But here I'm standing outside just enjoying the beautiful weather. And, of course, we fire overnight. We load outside when it's sometimes 10 below zero, we load that kiln, and then we fire it, and we've fired it off when it's been 12 below zero. But you couldn't ask for a richer time, especially at night and then early morning when the sun comes up or when the light begins to dawn.
Oh.
So that's it.
Thank you very much. Comment, Joe?
I think you could have Mark on your next segment, too, where you're going to be talking about biomass. He's heating with wood. And I did have, I guess it's a common theme for northern Wisconsin, splitting wood in the winter and having a wood fire. And it's something I've enjoyed doing.
I kind of like the idea.
Maybe I enjoy doing it because it's not our only source of heat. It's been a supplemental source.
I liked his comment, too, about a winter breakfast at a county park. Take the cook stove out there and take the food and just do it at a park. We do that often, ice fishing, and you write about that in your book as well. I believe you had a chapter on northern fishing for northern pike, but
I think we brought out a little heater that day or charcoal burner. But yeah, one thing about winter is it's easier to get a fire started. The wood is always dry, you know. If it's 5 degrees out, no problem with wet wood, so you can build a little warming fire.
Well, you know, we always take the Coleman stove out there and a pot and or a pan, a fry pan, and usually eggs and maybe some bacon, and take a little bread along. And while you're waiting for those tip-ups to start working, have yourself a great breakfast.
It can be kind of like tailgating. I did that last end of the winter. It wasn't something that made it into the book, but we did end of the winter northern tip-up fishing outing right at the end of February. The season normally closes, and right before it closes, the fish get a little bit more rambunctious, and the weather's a little nicer, and you can jig for panfish a little bit and watch the tip-ups, and then if you get hungry, we had, I think it was a venison sandwiches of some kind. They heated up on the stove, so it's a little bit like tailgating, so if you're watching tip-ups at the same time.
You mentioned that story didn't get in, but how did you select your stories for, and did you, these were all columns that you had written and probably edited a bit for your book.
Yeah, some I expanded on quite a bit. There's kind of a tolerance limit for both editors and readers of how long an outdoor column would be, and one reason I did the book was I wanted to expand on these ideas a little bit, but some I left them pretty much as they were. I was thinking I wanted it to be a work of nonfiction. And if you go back fiddling with a column that you wrote 6 years ago or 10 years ago, at least when I wrote it, maybe it wasn't great literature, but I had the thought fresh in my head, you know. So some I just kind of left them as they were. And I ended up throwing a lot out because this is stuff I do every winter. You know, every winter I'll be writing in a couple ice fishing stories and a couple skiing stories, and I just tried to pick ones that were representative.
And you know, some of those you date,
my filing system wasn't too good. If there was one where I remembered the date and I thought it was important to the story, because all winners are not created equal, I guess, and some winners are better for doing one thing versus another. I included the date, and others I just kind of thought, well, in a few cases I had actually combined a couple of columns from different winners, but I thought, well, this is typical of something I would be doing every winter, so the date's not especially important.
Maggie and Madison, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Maggie.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Great.
Great. Hey, first of all, congratulations, Joe. Actually, Joe and I are first cousins. And I want to say congratulations on the book.
All right.
Oh, this is Maggie Delaney?
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Oh, hi, Maggie.
I want to be sure and get some copies of this book. It sounds really cool. A couple of things. You guys were talking about fire. This wasn't why I was calling, but the morning of the blizzard last week, my husband and I went out in the backyard, you know, and we just took our little summer fire pit and brushed it off and made a great fire, had our coffee out there, let the snow come down, and we were in our own backyard, so that's a pretty easy winter thing to do. So don't put away the fire pits yet. I'd say get out there and enjoy them.
Oh, that's great. You know,
it is. But I was calling to say that our family started a tradition about 16 years ago where we watch the lake. We live about two blocks from Lake Monona here in Madison, and we watch the bay. And as it starts to open up, it happens really quickly sometimes. You have to watch it. But we put our canoe in, and with our boys years ago, used to be all four of us, now it's just two of us, but we take our paddles, and we're doing our little part to help spring arrive, and we break up the ice with our paddles, and it's a beautiful thing, because, you know, it's about 6 or 8 inches deep of ice, and you get it up on your paddle, and it's like crystal glass, and then you just shoot it, and it shoots, slides all across the ice and shatters, and you feel like you're paddling on the surface of the moon or something.
Oh.
It's really great, and I suppose it's pretty risky, but we always felt like we're just doing our part and enjoying the tail end of winter and welcoming spring. So,
oh, that's a wonderful story.
Keep your life jacket on, Maggie.
Yeah, we do. Yep, that's what everybody says. We're life jackets, but you hardly move. It's so slow going. And, yeah, we used to plunk our kids in there and off we'd go. So.
It's a great story. Thanks, Maggie.
You bet. Have a good one.
I should mention that Maggie has a beautiful singing voice, and she sings for a group named Harmonious Whale, which performs in Madison sometimes. So.
Oh, I've heard you sing, Maggie.
Thank you. And when we were out there with our fire the other day in the blizzard, we actually did some videos, and we put them up on YouTube. I was singing Christmas carols out there in the blizzard. So if you go to whale.com, W-A-I-L.com, you can click and find these YouTubes of us enjoying the fire out there.
We'll do that. Thank you, Maggie. Thank you very much. And Maggie mentioned picking up books. And I, you know, before we get away, we've still got plenty of time here, but how do people order books or get copies of the books? I'm sure it's probably available.
It's scattered somewhat randomly in independent bookstores in northwestern Wisconsin. It is on something called tomfolio.com, and it's on Amazon, which both are online places where it can be ordered. Tomfolio, I'm finding, is a little bit friendlier to the bookseller.
Tom, F-O-L-I-O, huh?
Right. Tomfolio. This is all a learning experience for me, too. I didn't know about Tomfolio before I published a book. But, yeah, it's the little bookstores like Tomfolio.
All right. I tell you what, check your bookstore. Check your local bookstore out, or you can just go to Tomfolio. Or where else did you say?
Amazon.
Oh, Amazon, of course. Tim Isley joins us next. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Larry and Joe. Good to hear from you. This is a great show. I wanted to mention, I wanted to compliment Joe. I've seen the book, and I was very impressed by it and enjoyed it. And there were two chapters in particular that I thought I might mention, and one that a couple of things that people might be interested in. One was, Joe, your chapter on cardinal music. And as we're talking right now, I'm looking out my back window on the west side of Madison, and I've got two male cardinals that are sitting here, and they've been eating some of the sunflower seed. But you make a good point in the chapter, and I think people don't realize that we didn't used to have cardinals around here earlier, and it wasn't until the 1950s, I think you indicated, that you saw them up around Chippewa Falls. We didn't used to have them here.
Right there. They're a little bit more of a southern bird. Well, you can tell by their gaudy color. I mean, the stuff that we usually have around here is drab, so we can blend in.
But that's a great – you're right, Tim. That is that was something I had – oh, I didn't know that.
No, and of course, during the winter, this is a great time to watch birds because we've got the leaves down and we've got different visitors that are around here now that aren't here during the summer, and bird watching is just great. And I thought Joe did a nice job on that. And the other chapter I got a kick out of was, of course, your chapter talking about Jack and Jane Edson and the Christmas tree farm. And they are excellent examples of private landowners who try and improve their land. And I wanted to compliment you on that. I enjoyed that, Joe.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah, it's always a surprise who's listening to public radio.
Oh, lots of people listen.
We could maybe plug the Christmas bird counts at this point, which are coming up.
You have a story on that, but what about the Christmas bird counts? You participate.
Well, I think that they're screwy. I'm odd for going ice fishing in the middle of winter, and people look at you funny sometimes when you explain that you like to ice fish. But every couple of winters, I join the local group headed by Dr. Charlie Kemper, who's a retired small practice doctor. And they actually do four in this area. They start out way at the edge of the boreal forest up at Holcomb and that on the Chippewa, and they follow the Chippewa River watershed on down. They do one in Chippewa Falls. They do one in Durand, which began when they were trying to make it. Their fourth one is at the confluence of the Chippewa River and the Mississippi. I'm down at Nelson, and one year they were going down there, and they got stuck in a snowstorm, and they couldn't make it to the Nelson cut count. They were hung up at Durand, so they just decided, well, we'll count here. And I think that was about 30 years ago, and every year since then, they've kept the Durand count going also. So.
Oh, that's great. Tim,
get yourself out of bed early on a cold winter morning. It's actually kind of fun counting birds in the winter.
Tim, thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye. Yeah, appreciate the call. And I just want to read this. I have an email from Brian in Monona. I really love Joe's new book. It's a fine collection of stories that really reflect the intelligence, playfulness, respect, and humor of lives well lived in outdoor Wisconsin. It's a lovely book. I encourage others to order copies as Christmas or New Year's gifts. Also like to give a shout out to Joe's illustrator, and I'm really glad that he did that, Mike, and my co-worker, Pat Shea, for the fine illustrations. And man, you have got, Pat just did a super job on those illustrations.
Yeah, he's kind of shy, but he's quite a good artist. He specializes in wildlife and baseball players, and he's done a fair amount of art for the Madison Arboretum, too. If you get gift cards from the Arboretum, it's likely to have some scene or critter drawn by Pat on it.
Yeah, and the drawings that are in here are just absolutely gorgeous. I love them. Mary in Bayfield, we'll turn to you. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Larry. Well, I know you enjoy Bayfield in the summer, Larry, but I just wanted to call in and let everybody know about all the great winter activities that we have up here, too. We have excellent downhill and cross-country skiing and snowshoeing trails. We have the ice caves here later in the season, and we've always got good snow here with Lake Superior, of course. But I was calling in because of my favorite winter activity is dog sledding.
Ah.
And it is just a fantastic way to get out there and enjoy the trails in the winter. It's really exciting. It's absolutely quiet, swishing through the woods with dogs pulling you. And it's just a wonderful way to interact with the dogs. And my husband and I just happened to run a dog sled tour business up here in Bayfield. So people have the opportunity to come up and visit, and we run very hands-on adventures so people can, we'll teach them all about the dogs. We have 40 very friendly, wonderful, social Siberian Huskies, and we'll teach them about the dogs. They learn how to put harnesses on. We'll do sled instruction, and then with us guiding the way out on the trail, our guests can drive their own dog sled team and follow us on the woods trails, and get a very hands-on, full experience of what it's like to drive your own dog team.
Wow, that sounds fabulous, Mary. What's the name of your...
Our company is called Wolf Song Adventures in Mushing.
Wolf Song?
Wolf Song, yes. Our sled dogs howl and sing like a pack of wolves at night. So there came the name for Wolf Song. That's our kennel name. And Wolf Song Adventures is the business.
And do you have a website?
We do. It's wolfsongadventures.com.
Wolfsongadventures.com. Boy, does that sound like fun.
Mary, do you do any ski joring with your dogs?
I do, yes. I do that just for personal fun and recreation. We don't normally do that with our tours with people, but it's a really fun activity, too. It brings cross-country skiing up to a whole new level of fun and speed and excitement and catastrophe sometimes. It's really, really fun, and that's definitely something that people can do with their pet dog. It doesn't have to be a professional sled dog. A lot of dog breeds will have that instinct to pull, and I know people do it with labs and golden retrievers, and just with a little bit of training and the right equipment, it's something that people can get out there and enjoy just with their one or two dogs that they have. And I also
this is something I do it with my English setter. We're a two-dog household. We have a husky who loves to howl and gets very excited when you get the leash out and she knows she's going for a walk, but she's a horrible sled dog. But on the other hand, the setter loves to run. He forgets you're back there even if you're ski-joring with him. He's just out for a sprint on his own.
That's great. I also just wanted to let people know about our Apostle Island Sled Dog Race that we have here. It is the first weekend in February. It's February 6th and 7th this year. And it's a great spectator activity, and people can also volunteer and be dog handlers and help bring teams up to the starting chute, or they can be at certain checkpoints out on the trail, too. So it's a really fun spectator and or volunteer opportunity for people.
Mary, a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Wolf Thank Song. That sounds like a lot of fun. That's another fodder for another column there.
I'm taking notes. I'll have to get up there and try that. While we're talking about the Bayfield area, let me just plug the book Across the Bay, which I had a column on that in the book. It's It's a fundraiser, I believe, for the Washburn Library, and they put Luminaria across Schwamigan Bay, and you start, they wait till night, and you start in Ashland and ski to Washburn, and it's really kind of a family thing, and it's very, it creates really a neat mood out on going across the bay, this string of lights you see fading off into the distance.
Boy, that sounds great. When is that done? Probably
it's before the Berkey. It's in February. Yeah,
in February, sometime in February. Well, if you go to Bayfield's Chamber of Commerce site, I'm sure you're going to find that. Well, I tell you what, I want to give Joel and Hurley a chance here too. Joel, hi.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Joel.
Hello.
Just wanted to let you know, or one thing you haven't talked about yet would be just regular old sledding. And one thing we've done up here is to have a sledding party at night, with a big bonfire, and then we do something we call a chili dump, where we have each family that comes bring enough chili that would maybe feed their family, but we put on a big pot on a Coleman stove or like a turkey cooker and have everyone dump their chili in there and mix it all up. And
that sounds like fun, too.
Makes it quite a unique recipe.
I would think. Oh, man. Well, sledding. And, you know, in the Hurley area, you've got some great hills, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and plenty of snow.
Plenty of snow always.
And plenty of snow. Thanks, Joel.
Sure.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to get time for Nick. Nick in Green Bay. Nick, hello. Oops, just a second here. I got the wrong... Push the wrong button here. Let's try that button. Okay, Nick, hello.
That sounds better. I was at Sam's Club the other day, and I heard, Larry, you were talking about, too. I was just inquiring about snowshoeing. It looks like a lot of fun, but my wife thinks I'm crazy.
Oh, I'm telling you. Snowshoeing, you know, if you compare it with cross-country, I do both cross-country skiing and snowshoeing, as does Joel. But I tell you what, in terms of ease, easiness, snowshoeing is pretty darn easy, isn't it, Joe?
It takes a little adjusting.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you get the right snowshoes, you put them on and you start walking. I never had any trouble with it. Joe, what about it?
You may need to adjust your gait a little bit. Have a slightly wider stance. Every winter I manage to step on the edge of my snowshoe and take a header, especially using the old traditional ones.
I tell you what, with the traditional snowshoes, but with the newer style, that isn't too much of a problem, and it really is a lot of fun. It really is a lot. And you can go places in the woods in the winter in some parts of Wisconsin where you're simply not – you wouldn't be able to go there without snowshoes. That's the beauty of it.
They definitely help. And if you are with a group of friends, the etiquette is to take turns breaking trail, so you all get that experience. So, it's much easier to walk behind someone than to walk in front of someone on snowshoes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, all this talk, 45 minutes here, and I've gotten all fuel to get outside. And if you pick up a copy of Frozen Assets, Joe's book, I think you're going to be even more enthused about getting outside and all the different things that he talks about in his book, Frozen Assets, Reflections on Winter in Northern Wisconsin. Joel, a great pleasure to talk to you today.
Oh, it's fun to do. I'm not sure I needed to write the book after hearing all the interesting things that your listeners are doing.
Oh, yeah, but you're a good writer, and it brings those activities, really, your writing brings those activities to life. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Joe Knight of Eau Claire, the Eau Claire Leader Telegram, is the author of Frozen Assets, Reflections on Winter in Northern Wisconsin, published by Downriver Publishing. And I hope you have a chance to take a look at it. It's a fun read, and you'll learn a few things. As Tim Isley was saying earlier, you'll learn a few things in there, too, things you probably didn't know. Even if you're really involved in those kinds of activities, you're going to learn a few things, too. But mostly, you're going to have a lot of fun reading the book. And I think you're going to have a lot of fun with our topic coming up next as we talk about biofuels research and maybe zero in a little bit on something called switchgrass. We've talked about it in the past. We'll get more in depth with that topic coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.